This morning's Dharma talk will be given by senior Dharma teacher and priest Bob Waldinger, who is also the Shuso for this session.
So, welcome back to the Adventures of Linji. I wanted to continue with the theme and with the reading, to go to an early part of this text that has really been resonating with me since we began this journey at Coming and Going Sesshin 20 years ago. So I'll just read a bit and let it sink in. If people of our own time are not able to realize the fruits of practice, why is it? It is because they do not have the virtue of self-confidence. Because you do not have the virtue of self-confidence, you're always preoccupied, in a hurry to run after myriad kinds of objects outside yourselves, and then you turn around in circles. You are turned around in circles by these objects, and you lose all your freedom. If you are able to put an end to the thinking that chases after external objects, you will see that there is no difference between you yourselves and our teacher, the Buddha. Do you want to know who our teacher, the Buddha, is? The Buddha is you yourselves who are standing before me, listening to me teach the Dharma. The practitioner who does not have enough self-confidence will always direct his attention to what is external and wander around and around looking for something. Even if he does find something, that object is just a beautiful form of writing and words. It is not the living mind of the master. Good monks, do not make this mistake. If in this present moment you are not able to meet the Buddha in person, then for countless lives to come, you will have to be reborn in the three realms of samsara, always searching for something to grasp hold of that will make you feel comfortable, continually being born in the womb of an ox or an ass. So, this self-confidence thing is pretty important. Lin Ji is saying we need to have it, or we're lost. And of course, my first thought is, oh, gotta get that. Gotta find it somewhere. Must be somewhere that I can get hold of. And in fact, I've been spending a little more time than usual on social media, and lots of people think that too. There are blog posts with the 10 secrets to gaining more self-confidence. There is a talk by a researcher who tells us that actually our posture can increase our self-confidence. And it's one of the most watched TED Talks on the internet. So, this yearning for more self-confidence is very great. But of course, that's not what Lin Ji is talking about. In fact, he's saying, if you go to those blog posts, those 10 secrets of self-confidence, that's like trying to make rice by boiling sand. And in fact, I wonder if those talks are watched over and over again because people find that they're just not getting rice. And what Lin Ji cautions us about is not to go after these objects outside of ourselves, because they'll turn us around and around in circles and we'll lose our freedom. And that, of course, is true. We talked yesterday about showing up as ourselves, and then we began to say, oh, but that could be a strategy. Got to get that. Got to go find a way to show up as myself. And any time we reach outside of ourselves for a strategy to fix, we lose the ability to just show up as we are in each moment. There's a quote by Joseph Campbell that I love. He wrote once, "If the path before you is clear, you're probably on somebody else's path." So, how do we get this self-confidence? If all of our attempts to reach for it somewhere else don't give us what we're after and certainly aren't nourishing, where do we look? Well, first, I found myself looking inward and asking the question, what is this confidence? Or what am I not confident of? When I look inward, that's not hard to find. One of the things that comes up so vividly for me whenever I'm about to leave for a session is great dread. And I've been to many sesshins, and yet every time I'm about to leave, this dread arises in the pit of my stomach and permeates my whole body. And I began to wonder, what is it that I dread? What exactly? And my thoughts went to, well, I dread not being able to sleep as well as I want to. I dread not being able to use the bathroom when I want to. I dread aching knees. I dread soup I don't like very much. I dread. And what it all boils down to is that I'm afraid. I don't have the confidence that I'm going to be okay meeting each moment as it is. That's really what it comes down to for me, and I think for so many of us. That it's not going to be all right. I'm not going to be all right. Just meeting each moment and letting it arise. But of course, what we find when we do this beautiful practice is that we do meet each moment. Even in the hell realms where we think we can't bear another minute, even when sometimes my zafu looks worse than being born in the womb of an ox or an ass, we meet it. We meet the moment. And there is some confidence that develops. Slowly, slowly. Ah! Didn't think I could meet that. Met it. And of course, that confidence develops through greater and greater intimacy with our life, with all the tiny aspects of being human and having a heart and a mind. But I've also come to see that for me, that intimacy needs another ingredient. It needs my Sangha. It needs all of you. Because many times when I'm alone with my heart and my mind, I'm in trouble. And what I find is that we do for each other sometimes something we can't do for ourselves, that we can see each other's Buddha nature. I can see your Buddha nature so clearly, even when I can't see my own. And you can do the same. And that's why we go for Doksan. And that's why we have Dharma dialogues. And that's why we hold each other in this beautiful practice. But also we have these ancient stories. I've been encountering a new Zen story for the last 24 hours. It's a story about a head monk named Bob. He's a head monk in a faraway place, far away from China anyway, called Worcester. And this head monk has never been head monk before, and he's learning all these new things. And this head monk has made more mistakes in 24 hours than any monk in the whole history of Zen. He is the worst monk in the whole history of Zen. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But then Melissa reads us the story about Lin Ji yesterday. Lin Ji, who sits for 3 years and doesn't know what to ask, doesn't feel confident. And in that moment, I know that Lin Ji and I are the same. Our nature is the same. We're 1,200 years apart. We're half a world apart, and yet we are the same. And that the Buddha nature that I think can't be it, my 10,000 mistakes, my shame, my mind of right and wrong, which I insist cannot be Buddha. That's me, that's Lin Ji, that's all these teachers who have left us these stories. I love Melissa talking about the idea that what we often do is we compare our insides to other people's outsides. Often to the shiny images that other people present to us and that we imagine to be all there is. What is such a gift about these ancient stories is that they are trying to present to us their insides. And so I was able to get a glimpse of Lin Ji's inside as a monk and say, oh yes, brother. And so, confidence in the Buddha nature of just this mind, just this body, just this moment, builds through becoming more intimate with it, through the teachings from each other, from our ancestors. But this confidence doesn't just build through greater and greater intimacy with my own messy, chaotic Buddha nature. That at a certain point, we make choices. Yesterday, when Melissa was telling us about her experience of saying, cut it out, Melissa, she was talking about a choice. There's a certain point where we can choose intimacy and freedom, or we can choose to keep decorating the prison cell with emails and texts and to-do lists. We all chose to come and explore this great matter, which is the intimacy of our very lives. We make these choices along the way. We turn toward rather than turning away. And that offers us what I think is one of the most hopeful phrases in Master Lin Ji's text. He says, and he says it very humbly, he says, as far as this speaker is concerned, every place is a place of arrival. Every place is a true home for the practitioner. Mistakes, anger, joy, messiness, Every place is a place of arrival. And so every moment is coming home. So, please sit comfortably or uncomfortably, or whatever moves you. Would welcome thoughts, questions, strategies. Yeah.
Thanks for your talk. And yeah, before session, that feeling in your stomach, I can totally relate. But there's also that thought of, oh, well, the second or third day, you'll figure that out and it'll be good. And the past couple of days, I've been thinking, oh, yeah, my pain, this pain is, no, it can't be this. It can't be this. And there's the constantly, oh, yep, no, it's that.
And, yeah.
All right, shit, it's this. I guess I'll go with it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you go with it. Because what other choice do we have?
All right, do we have the choice maybe to, I love your phrase, decorate the prison cell? To put a head on top of our head to say, I shouldn't be having this pain.
Yeah.
This is not okay. And if I were enlightened, I wouldn't have it anymore. You know, I think you pointed out that's what Master Lingzhi's pointing to.
He's saying,
like, really just the reading we did today from Chinul.
Yes.
Said the same thing.
He was perfect.
He was perfect. This is it. But it's hard to believe. Because we do have that extra head that's saying, no, come on, if you're just not doing it right.
Right.
Get with the program, and then you'll be free of suffering for the rest of your life.
Right. And even putting that other head on our shoulders, that's also it.
Mm-hmm.
We just hopefully wake up in moments and recognize, oh yeah, that's what I'm doing.
I like what you said about self-confidence, that the first thought is that I need to get it. Because that's my first thought. I've been working on that. And there is something, it seems to work. Like, it's, because I really I don't have confidence that's so strong. So I kind of try to do, kind of tell myself or do things that I've also have a better posture. So there is also a strong like sense that it somehow it also works, but. Then I remember what David said, that it, something that it's subtle, that that it doesn't need to, I don't know if you said self-confident, but now it relates for me to that, that it doesn't need to be that dramatic, it can be more subtle.
Yeah. Well, and in the reading, the part Bob read, Lingzhi also says you may find some beautiful object, like you may find a great TED talk or the 10 things, and that can be helpful in some way. But ultimately, you know, it's actually, there's something beneath that or beyond that, that, you know, this. The looking outside ourselves.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I'm going to find self-confidence, and I'm sure if someone just tells me the right thing, I will get it. Yeah. So this possibility of looking right where we are, you know, in so many ways, that's the... Because I'm sure I don't have it. You know, and it could be self-confidence, it could be wisdom, it could be compassion... I'm sure I don't have it, and so I'll look around, And again and again, this is, so how do we turn the light within? And then it gets to, so if I have it, maybe it's not what I think it is. Right. So then we begin to look, what if self-confidence is not something else? Mm-hmm. Not, what if being awake is not some other state? Then we have to look very closely. Oh, what could it be? Mm. What is this? Yeah.
Julie.
Yeah, as you were talking, I had this feeling that over the years, something similar to what you're describing as self-confidence has become more present. And I was saying it isn't something that I feel like I've gotten, or even something that's arisen so much as something that's become uncovered. This falling into a well of this feeling that I am uniquely defective. And for me, it was particularly around these that I'm uniquely deficient in capacities for warmth and compassion. This was mine. I'm sure people have their own flavors. the initial insight of, it feels so true. Maybe it's a story. Just realize that, maybe I don't have to be quite so convinced. And then looking at it, getting a little bit of the distance. And I found over the years that it started to stay around for shorter times. That maybe I'd only go in for 10 minutes before I'd have a little bit of doubt and a little bit of distance. Yeah. And then maybe 2 minutes, and then maybe I start to catch it like on the slide as I'm going into the well. Oh, it's that same old slide again. I don't really have to believe it. And as I was listening now, I was thinking, this. Now, what was that story again? I had to consciously stop and think about what that old falling in the well story was.
Yeah, that's lovely. Yeah.
And it isn't, it wasn't, didn't come. So for me, it was that doubting. Right. Doubting that self-doubt. Yeah. It was the first.
And I think it's so important what you've said, that it wasn't about trying to get rid of anything, right? It was about letting something emerge that was innate in you, and seeing the story for what it is, and keeping, keep coming up, and you keep noticing, oh yeah.
And it's still there.
There, always there to be.
I stopped feeling it, I just had a little doubt when I felt it, and eventually that seems to have taken the energy.
Yeah.
You know, when you were telling your story about being the worst monk, it's a little bit like this, right? This is what we're onto here. And I was realizing that it's a little bit like, so we sometimes use these words stories, but it's sort of like dreams, like having bad dreams. Yeah. And I have this experience sometimes of being asleep and dreaming, and everything is going wrong, and I'm doing everything wrong, and it's just very convincing because I'm dreaming, and then I wake up, like literally I wake up, and I'm so relieved that I'm just this messed up person, not the one in the dream, which is much, much, much worse. And so there is this dreamlike quality to these stories. They're very there's the Tibetans call them. Well, they're sort of autistic. They're like they only look within. They don't. They're not getting. We don't get feedback in those moments from anyone outside. There's just this, churning around in the dream state, and then any moment when we catch it, it self releases. They say, and that is it. We don't do it. We don't have these strategies, but we really do. Something breaks through. It's like the sun breaking through the clouds, or like waking up from a bad dream. And sometimes I'll try to recall the dream, like you were saying, just at the edge of falling down. And I almost want to grab onto that because it was so vivid and exciting. But it wasn't real. None of the people were real. But it's so convincing. Wow. Mm. So good. So this waking up, seeing everything as a dream sometimes, is another way of playing with these stories. Like, oh, now I'm in the dream of being the worst monk. I've had that dream.
Yeah.
or I'm in the dream of whatever, you fill in the blank, of not being loving enough, right? That's so wonderful to see this.
Yeah. You know, and when you talk about it being so convincing, for me, it's just, it's that it's so emotionally vivid. Like, you know, there are a lot of other parts of my mind and my moments that are not so vivid, and these are like, oh boy, they grab me and they they just take hold. And
for me, it's surprising what happened at that moment, because as you can hear, it's English is not my language, and I said, I discover before speaking, I prepare all the phrases. But finally, in the meantime, I said, when you speak French, it's the same. Sometimes when you speak in a group, you want to be perfect or not to say stupid things. So finally, even if I speak, my English is not fluent, I don't, in the meantime, it was a mixture or a share between be free and to be free and to depend on other people. It's clear or not?
I think so. To be free and to depend on other people.
Yeah.
Like a mixture of those two.
Yeah, true.
Yeah.
Usually we think those are separate things.
Right.
So I'm going to be free, I won't need anyone.
Yeah.
But I think we're talking here, there's some great freedom of connection, where we get to be ourselves, and of course we need other people.
Yeah, true.
And almost the freedom is free to need other people, free to be a human being.
But finally, when I was cleaning this room a few minutes before, it was the same. I wanted to let this room perfectly without any rubbish. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's always the same way of living and thinking.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
And by the way, Marie-Pierre, just great appreciation for your coming forward. I mean, it's hard enough to come forward in a language that's our own, but to come forward in another language is really a great gift. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes.
Thanks a lot. I wish I spoke French as well. Yeah. So it strikes me that this is kind of a funny sort of self-confidence. That I would like to feel more confident, you know. And I have this image of what that would be like. You know, I know what to do, and I would, you know, I would get out there and do, and things would be great. Mostly, I'm not that way at all. You know, I'm a pretty introverted sort of person, and I have all of this anxiety and the fears that come up for me, and it's easy to fall into this pit of, you know, wishing that I was otherwise, you know, that I had this confidence that I don't actually have. You know, I would like to not be afraid and not have anxiety arising, you know, and wouldn't that be wonderful? And I imagine this place of no anxiety and no fear, where I confidently am marching through life, you know, and how nice that would be. And yet, you know, I don't think that what we're talking about here for self-confidence is actually that, right?
No.
The self-confidence, I think maybe I'm kind of playing with the idea of this being
confident enough to be with my anxiety,
yes,
and my fear, and to have the notion that that anxiety and fear is my place of practice, is my dojo, but not even in a way that you know, that I might solve the problem of anxiety, right? Because sometimes I think to myself, well, does it really matter? You know, what if I am anxious for the rest of my life? You know, that I am just a more anxious person than a lot of other people, which seems to be absolutely true. I have fairly high anxiety levels, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And does that actually matter, you know, in some sense? You know, can I be an anxious person who moves out into the world and does things, you know, and to have this notion that there's something to be learned here right in the middle of my experience, just as it is.
And is being that person actually perfect? You know, that you have come forth through all kinds of causes and conditions, and this manifestation is just as it is. No other needed.
Right.
But it doesn't feel that way, you're saying.
A Zen sort of perfect where
it's
perfect just as it is. Which it is, right? In that sense, it's perfect that I am right here. I mean, this is my place.
And you're saying, and please, I could use a little improvement.
Right, and I would rather be anywhere else, right, than where I am. But this is the place where I am.
Yeah.
Right? And this is my opportunity of practice.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is where I learn how to be me in the face of anxiety. Is by right here in the middle of this anxiety, can I be the person that I mean to be?
And that's the freedom.
Right.
That's the freedom,
the freedom to be me.
Yeah.
To not need to have it some other way, you know? Even though I desperately would like it to be. That's a certain kind of self-confidence.
Yeah, it is.
Well, and I heard once that the root of confidence is confidelis, with fidelity. Mm-hmm. So, or maybe with authenticity, rather than something outside me, but with my, exactly what you're saying. What if it's with myself, with fidelity to whatever is here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very different take on it. Yeah.
Well, and in the sense that I was speaking about before, so this is the dream of the anxious one. Being courageous doesn't mean dropping the anxiety, right? And we know that, the word courage, it's just, it means full of heart. It doesn't mean free of anxiety anymore. And who was it who said that being brave is going out, feeling fear and going out and doing it anyway?
Yes, yes.
Right? So these are these internal states, the dream state of the heart-mind doesn't have to be the guidance for behavior, right? That there is a certain freedom that we can feel anything we want. I mean, anything that's present, but do certain things anyway.
Yeah.
Right? So the dream of the worst monk doesn't mean that you don't.
That I don't show up.
That you don't show up and give a Dharma talk and don't, you know, turn on the lights when you're supposed to. Right? You do it anyway, even though there's this persistent dream state that of a definition of the self. Which ultimately, you can't strategize how to make this different. Even if you say, I'm just going to be with it. You know, then there's the secret practice of, and then I'll be done. You know, it'll go away. But what you said at the very beginning, I think, is really important here. And it's really related to what you were saying about the pain. What if this is it?
Mm.
And the big joke of this particular dream is, right, it is right now. And we have no way of knowing how it's going to unfold. So might as well live here. Like the last line of Groundhog Day. Let's live here. And it feels like a choice. But who's choosing, right?
Seva, you mentioned something about the darkness breaking through, the light breaking through the darkness, and I'm thinking too that sometimes it's, for me, it's like the darkness has to break through this sort of artificial light, like the head of the so subtle, and it seems to cast light that matches my ideas of what it should be. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, as I can kind of let myself feel the depths of that doubt, or that somehow that darkness breaks through the sort of artificial light, that kind of has come up for me in your talk.
Yeah.
And I also love the, every time I see a YouTube thing with a million hits, I'm going to think about myself and others trying to make rice.
Yeah, really. One of the ironies of this whole conversation is Bob has a TED talk that has 1.5 million hits. It's gone viral. Yeah, but it's I wouldn't say that it's the kind of TED talk you were referring to.
Not one of those TED talks. No. It's a very different. Make sure you see it, though.
But it is kind of cool because the topic is what makes people happy.
Yeah.
So you can imagine, ooh, I'm going to do that. And then, you know, what you don't give a 10-point scheme. Mm-hmm. You just say, this is what the research shows on this particular study. And it is very heartening because it's about being in relationship. Having, you know, being like in a room like this is it contributes to health and happiness.
Yeah. It's basically sangha.
Yes, sangha. Having sangha. Who to thunk it?
And I think this thing about letting the darkness break through. Mm. You know, all of us have so much in our mind. We're working so hard. We listen to the Buddhist teachings, and we think, okay, I'm going to do this. But there is something about the giving up. And I think that relates to the strategies. And I love, there is this artificial light that we tell ourselves, I'm really okay, it's really fine, you know. And there is something about the breakdown of that and the beauty of the breakdown when we see, oh, I am fucked. There is no hope. And until we really come to that realization, right, then we're just caught in the artificial light of the 10 weird things.
Yeah. The artificial light of the 10 weird things.
I love that. So part of our practice is letting the dark break through.
Yeah.
Not having to do anything. Yeah. And the freedom. There's some freedom. If I don't have to keep the darkness away. Yeah. If I don't have to protect myself with my great ideas or my wonderful... wonderful, Jamie. Thank you.
It makes me think of Deshan's enlightenment story where he was talking to his teacher and it was dark and his teacher said, time for you to go to bed. And he looked outside and said, oh, it's dark outside. So the teacher lit a candle for him. And then as he gave him the candle, he blew it out.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa!
Yeah.
I love that moment. Yeah. The beautiful darkness, the dark night of the soul. So,
thank you.